From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Robert Zubrin joins us. Yep, he's the one who wants to terraform Mars. Well, he's written a new book called Energy Victory. He has a plan to destroy OPEC. This should be one heck of a program. Little program note for all of you. We will be live on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Those of you who haven't circled it on your calendar yet, and I got to tell you, on Christmas Eve, Lionel Fanthorpe has done a little rendition for us of "Twas the Night Before Christmas," and I just heard it today. Man, it brings chills up and down my arms. You're going to love it. That'll be Christmas Eve, and then he's done another one for us for Christmas Day. I think a little bit of a Christmas Carol story for us. Here are some of the top stories of the day before we get into our special guest for this hour. A United States F-16 fighter used an air-to-air missile to destroy a rocket in its boost phase for the first time this week in a test. This was a test. It's only a test of a new missile defense concept. The system, named the Net Centric Airborne Defense Element, NCDE, breaks new ground in that it would arm fighter aircraft or drones with missiles fast enough to intercept a ballistic missile as it lifts into space. The aircraft would have to get to within 100 miles of the launch site to catch the ascending missile in the first 2 or 3 minutes after launch. Technology, here we go. Iran remains a threat to the world despite new intelligence saying the country may not be building nuclear weapons, according to President Bush. The president said the report released on Monday was a warning signal and that his view that a nuclear Iran would be a danger hasn't changed at all. The president stressed that Iran was still trying to enrich uranium and could restart its weapons program. In Oregon, National Guard troops evacuating residents in a flooded town and tens of thousands of residents remain without power after back-to-back storms pounded the Pacific Northwest, killing at least 5 people. Troops with the Oregon Air National Guard used inflatable rafts to evacuate residents in Vernonia, a mountain timber town about 35 miles northwest of Portland. There is an elephant called Raja Gaj, who stands nearly 12 feet tall at the shoulder. He's not been seen for a year in Nepal, in their national park. Raja was the subject of a scientific speculation several years ago that he might be a genetic throwback to the mammoths or mastodons because of his sheer size. But a DNA test later confirmed that he was just simply a large, regular Asian elephant. Well, they think he might be dead. They just haven't found him in a year somewhere out there in the national park. The remains of a bus-sized prehistoric monster reptile found on a remote Arctic island may be a new species never before recorded by science. Initial evacuation of a site yielded the remains, the teeth, the skull fragments, and the vertebrae of a reptile estimated to measure nearly 40 feet long. How'd you like to see that coming when you were in your canoe on a float trip? The only surviving copy of the 500-year-old map that first used America goes on permanent display this month at the Library of Congress. But even as it prepares for its debut, the 1507 Waldseemüller map remains a puzzle for researchers. Why? Well, why did the mapmaker name the territory America and then change his mind later on? How was he able to draw South America so accurately? Why did he put a huge ocean west of America years before European explorers discovered the Pacific? The map was created by a German monk, and in a moment we're going to be talking with an expert about this map and other secret voyages to the New World on Coast to Coast AM. Gunnar Thompson happens to be a time detective whose enduring passion has been to uncover the secrets of the past. He's a world traveler. He's an archaeologist. He's an anthropologist who has served on the faculties of 7 universities just here in the United States. Gunnar is also the director of the New World Discovery Institute, and he's written several watershed books and numerous articles on the subjects of early voyages to the New World before Columbus. Secret Voyages to the New World. He was my guest back in February. Gunnar, how are you?
I'm great, George. It's fun to be back on my favorite radio program, Coast to Coast AM.
Good to have you, because you make us think. And let me tell you, I'm thinking about this 500-year-old map, and I'm wondering how in the heck did this German monk come up with some of this? What do you think about this?
Well, it's great to see the Library of Congress bringing out a map that has many mysteries about the incredible accuracy, as you said, of South America appears in this map. This map shows not only the Atlantic Ocean, but also the Pacific Ocean bordering on the New World continents. And as you asked, how is it possible that the Europeans in the 1500s, so soon after Columbus, were aware of the Pacific Ocean, particularly when our own history says that the Pacific Ocean wasn't discovered until 1513 by Balboa crossing over Panama. And there we have it.
An expert who looked at the map said the actual shape of South America is correct, and he said the accuracy is 70 miles. It's correct within 70 miles of being accurate. That's incredible.
The accuracy is incredible. But at a presentation to the Library of Congress back in 2005 on the specific topic of Zhenghe and the Chinese, I pointed out that the Chinese had a map dating to 1425. That's about 50 to 75 years before Columbus. And this map shows almost exactly the same outline for South America. So it's apparent that the Chinese were busy mapping South America before the Europeans got there.
Even in those days, the 1500s, for example, how were they able to map geography? I mean, did they have some kind of instrument to do this? Surely, Gunnar, they weren't flying ahead over, you know, above, and they didn't see the outline of the continents that way. How did they do it?
Well, the Chinese had been using hot air balloons by several centuries before this date, but probably the most important invention that they had already developed by this point in time was a telescope. The Chinese probably had telescopes perhaps as long as 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, and this long predates the supposed European invention of the telescope, which is credited to either Galileo or to a Dutchman named Lepershey in about 1608 or 1609. So they had telescopes, and they also had a sophisticated type of clock called a clepsydra that was based on measuring water levels. So they had a clock, they had a telescope, and they could also use skyrockets and kites to set up lines of reference that would go for hundreds of miles. And by setting up this grid using kites and rockets and flares, they were able to map the continents.
So as these things are all lined up, they're drawing them, I guess.
Exactly. They're using these as a reference point. And the problem that Europeans have had is presuming that the Chinese lack sophisticated technology until the Europeans arrived with the Jesuits and the in the 1500s and the 1600s. And the reality is, by and large, most of the sophisticated instruments, such as the clock, guns, telescopes, and whatnot, the Europeans got the original ideas from the Chinese and then took them one step further, actually perfected them more.
Well, this German monk, Martin Waldseemüller, what do you think, if you had to speculate on how he came up with his map, how he was able to, for example, so accurately put in, the Pacific Ocean and put in South America and, you know, have the name America and then not? I mean, I wonder how do you even come up with that?
Well, Waldseemüller got his maps initially from a guy named Amerigo Vespucci. And Amerigo Vespucci started out as a spy working for the King of Spain. When Columbus sailed over in 1492, sailing west, his claim was that he knew a shortcut to China. And when Columbus got back from his voyage in 1492, he told the King of Spain and the Queen of Spain that he had indeed reached China. And the King and the Queen rushed off this information to the Pope, and the Pope declared, yes, indeed, Columbus has found a shortcut to China. And therefore, he gave Spain a monopoly over all of the travel on the Atlantic Ocean. So there was this belief on the part of Columbus, and initially on the part of the Spaniards, that they had found a shortcut to China. But there were some people that questioned that this was possible. And so, as time went on and the king began to doubt that Columbus had actually made it to China, he picked a spy who was actually working as a clerk in a Medici storeroom that was helping to outfit the Columbus voyages. He picked this clerk, whose name was Amerigo Vespucci, and he said, I want you to sail on past where Columbus has landed, what he calls China, and find out what in the dickens is going on over there. What really is happening? Are we on the coast of China, or is something else going on? And so in 1497, on a voyage to resupply the colonies of Columbus on Haiti, Hispaniola, Amerigo Vespucci sailed on beyond and reached the Yucatan Peninsula, and he realized that this wasn't China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's off by a little bit.
He's off by 10,000 miles at least. So it was the role of Vespucci to find out what was going on. And Vespucci sailed three times for the Spaniards and once for the Portuguese. And when he sailed for the Portuguese, he gained access to maps that Portuguese spies had brought back from the Orient. Nicolo de Cante, Pero de Cavilha, and some others had brought back Yuan Dynasty and Ming Dynasty maps of the world. And one of these maps recently turned up about a year ago in Beijing, China. It was called the 1418 Ming map. And this is one of the earliest maps to show North and South America. And it actually shows North and South America before the date of the Waldseemüller map. But this was how Vespucci got a hold of the Portuguese documents. He passed those documents on to Waldseemüller, who initially gave credit for the discoveries to Amerigo Vespucci. And later on, he changed his mind.
I see. Now, 22 years later, there was another map drawn up, which wasn't discovered until 1929. But it was apparently a genuine document drawn up in 1513 by a Turkish admiral by the name of Piri Reis. And this map showed some incredible accuracy as well of South America and Africa. But what really blows everybody's mind about this map, Gunnar, is the fact that it shows the northern coastline of Antarctica 300 years before it was discovered. How in the heck did he do this?
Well, one of the things that's noted on the Piri Reis map is he discusses some of his sources. And one of the sources that he mentions is the ancient library at Alexandria, Egypt. And this library contained some of the most ancient charts that were done by the very ancient navigators, perhaps several hundred years B.C. The Phoenicians and the Greeks were sailing around the world. And they also were using telescopes and sophisticated surveying techniques. And a number of their maps have come down to us, and some of them were incorporated in the Piri Reis map. And once again, it's a situation where when European historians decided to write the history of the discovery of the New World, their initial goal was to justify the church's belief that they had found a shortcut to China. And when this proved false, they had to essentially cover up the mistakes that they had made. So they then came up with the idea that God had chosen Columbus to discover America, and anybody else that was out there sailing around before, all of their claims and all of their maps were to be regarded henceforth as unacceptable from a historic standpoint. And so they were just totally dismissed. And so basically most European historians have decided that the Piri Reis map is unimportant, that the Chinese maps are unimportant, that the maps by Marco Polo and the Chinese are unimportant. And essentially what it does is it totally assassinates the heritage of the multi-ethnic ancient explorers of the New World.
Gunnar, there are some theories that mankind is much older than we think. Is it possible that older civilizations with high technology had maps that might have been found by the ancients, and they made up their own maps? I mean, is that conceivable?
Well certainly. And we know definitely that the Chinese, for example, were observing sunspots by about 1,000 years B.C. And the Chinese have a map called the Shanhai Jing, which historians are certain is at least dated to the 11th century A.D., but may go back as far as 2,000 to 3,000 years B.C., when, according to one Chinese geography, the Shanghai Jing geography, that the Chinese emperor sent explorers out all over the world, and the result of this was a map that showed the old world in the center and the new world as a ring continent. And this ring continent was the concept that there was land all the way around the old world was inherited by the Phoenicians and the Greeks. So what we see in the ancient cartography is kind of echoes of a lost knowledge that just in parts was able to manage to survive, because most of your maps are done on paper.
Sure.
Paper is one of the first things that disintegrates. But you're absolutely right. There was an ancient knowledge. There were ancient civilizations. The continent of Mu, the continent of Atlantis are just a few of the
possibilities.
Yeah, well, a few of the legends that have survived. And there were probably other places, other civilizations that archaeologists have only begun to imagine.
See, the more I get into this, Gunnar, about, let's say, Atlantis, the more I'm convinced that I think something was there. I think there was a civilization there that might have been pretty darn advanced. There's too many things that go through civilizations that kind of hint to an Atlantis or a past civilization. These maps, for example. I mean, it was too much knowledge that got lost.
You're right, George, and a lot of it has been lost underwater. As the Ice Age glaciers melted, the oceans rose by 300 to 400 feet, and those ancient civilizations are lost to us only because they disappeared beneath the waves.
I just read where they think in the future, things keep going the way they're going, Indonesia will lose most of their islands. They'll be gone.
Yes.
Just amazing. In this particular case of these old maps, are you convinced that somebody beat Christopher Columbus here?
Well, absolutely. I can tell people just a brief list of a number of maps that have survived. Historians are aware of a map by a Roman geographer named Macrobius, and that dates to about 440 AD. And Macrobius has a map that shows land west of Europe with the outline of Florida and the Gulf of Mexico. And the Roman senator, philosopher Seneca, mentioned that what they called the Caspian Sea was a huge gulf that opened onto the ocean. And part of this Caspian Sea, according to Roman geographers, was called the Gulf of Hurricanes. Well, according to modern historians, though, even the word hurricane wasn't known until Columbus crossed over to the Gulf of Mexico and found the natives talking about these great winds of the Gulf of Mexico being hurricanes. Well, the native peoples in the New World had known about hurricanes and had discussed them with the Romans, and thus we find the Gulf of Mexico showing up on Roman maps. Now, the Romans called it the Caspian Sea, but there were two Caspian Seas, and the Romans called Florida after the goddess of spring, which is a very characteristic aspect of Florida. After the Romans, the English sent explorers to North America to map the area, and it shows up on a map by Alberton de Verga in 1410 or 1414, and then we have the Vinland maps, even maps by an English cartographer named Ranulf Higdon in 1350s made maps of Vinland. So there isn't just the one Yale Vinland map that most people are familiar with. There were a whole bunch of them. There were all kinds of European maps that showed parts of the New World. Now, they weren't real accurate, and they started getting accurate in the 15th century when more sophisticated tools and the Chinese cartography started making its way into Europe.
Okay, the website, of course, for Gunnar Thompson is MarcoPoloVoyages.com. His latest work, Secret Voyages to the New World. You know, Michael Cremo believes that, you know, our mankind might be hundreds of millions of years old. And that's just an incredible possibility. Gunnar, thanks for being on the program. I'll be back in just a moment with open lines now. Here are the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And here's that wild card line, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Robert Zubrin joins us. Energy victory, winning the war on terror by breaking free of oil. Should be a fascinating program. We'll be back now with open line phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Sharon in Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey, Sharon. How's Phoenix?
Well, Phoenix is the way Phoenix always is. It's always nice.
It's always nice. That's right.
I thought you would like the opportunity to wish those of us who are Jewish a happy Hanukkah.
That's right. I was going to do that on the next break, but you jumped me, so happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. And the second thing I wanted to tell you was my daughter took a course in Tucson. She went to U of A, and she took an archaeological course. And they had a digging of a 2,000-year-old Native American site that had ancient Hebrew writing on the site. And she was actually able to read the ancient Hebrew writing from her education, Jewish education, and it was directly dated to that time of 2,000 years ago.
That's incredible. Now, what did it say specifically?
She couldn't make out exactly what it said. She could make out the letters, but it was too vague to be able to realize exactly what it said. But it was there from 2,000 years ago, so we know that we made it over here.
Isn't that part of history incredible?
It's unbelievable. She called me the minute she got out of class. She says, "You'll never believe what I just saw in class today."
That's great. And Hanukkah started right after sundown, right?
Right at sunset, actually.
Sunset.
A little bit different, right at sunset.
Okay. And how long does it last?
It will last for 8 days.
It
will end at sundown. 8 days later.
Nice.
An hour after.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Yes.
Thanks.
8 days.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Enjoy. First-time caller line, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Hello.
Hey, this is Brent from Alabama.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is the first time I've been through, and I'd just like you to know how much I enjoy your program, and it's really the highlight. I work night shifts, so I really enjoy listening to you.
It kind of breaks the night, doesn't it? It just gives you that different feeling.
Yeah, I really look forward to it. And also just the fact that there's not many programs like yours that will explore, you know, the unknown, and a lot of times the things that we're not getting in the mainstream media.
No, they're not. You know, there's some very nice programs on the internet and in smaller markets, but in terms of mainstream or large markets, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking about the internet, before I get to my question, you know, I think it's really the invention of our lifetime, because it's a way that we can communicate in ways that we haven't communicated before. We can get points of view across that you're not going to get through the mainstream media. And don't you know, the world planners, this really just hit them out of left field. And the first thing they do is they immediately try to ridicule anything you find on the internet, and they immediately try to ostracize that type of media, and for good reason, because it's a threat to their agenda, don't you think?
Well, I think the internet's an incredible tool, and, you know, with the positive things, and there are, of course, negative things. Things balance out. But overall, it has been an absolute wonder for me personally in terms of research. I mean, there are moments that when a guest is on the air and he's talking about something I might not have any idea, he just throws it out into left field, you know, I can go quickly and search it and get some information.
Yeah.
Make me sound like I know what I'm doing.
Well, you do a good job at that, George. But my question is this, and I'm hoping that you'll have a guest in the upcoming programs that would address this. But, and you speak to this somewhat, so I know you're knowledgeable in this area, but what do you feel that, you know, I feel personally, I'm a Christian. I do believe that we are in the last days, the Bible foretells. And I think it's amazing how prophecy seems to be lining up with the world events. I mean, here we are, the Middle East is the focus of just about every news day and what goes on there. And it's just amazing how the Bible foretells these things. And, you know, knowing that it was written thousands of, you know, a lot of the Old Testament thousands of years ago, that they had the foreknowledge to address these specific issues, such as the violence in the Middle East and, you know, the events that happen on a daily basis. And I just wanted to get your opinion on
it. Oh, it's incredible prophecy. And we have and will continue to do programs on, you know, Armageddon and what end times very well may be for all of us. Not to worry about that. East of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hello there.
Hi, I'm Brian from Toledo.
Hey, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Great to talk to you, sir. And I hope that you didn't mention this before. I'm not getting anything repeated. But this morning on today's show, they were featuring, you know, maps from the 1700s and 1800s of the United States.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did a map show just a few moments ago. But that's okay. Go ahead. What's your question?
My question is, is that from alien technology, or how could they have designed that so accurately?
Well, the expert we just had on talked about old instruments that a lot of them might have had. But I have always wondered if the ancients were given these maps by extraterrestrials who came down from above. I mean, I don't know how you can be that accurate with their system. I don't think they could have done it today without the kind of instrumentation we have.
With GPS, I've had so many teachers over the years that they could never really answer that question. They would kind of just, you know, scatter around the question.
It's incredible. I think in some cases they might have had some ET help.
Well, thank you very much. If my sister Sherry is listening, hello.
There you go. Sherry, west of the Rockies, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, this is Gary from California.
Hi, Gary.
I have a relatively dumb question, I think.
Nah, there's never a dumb question.
Yeah, two or three estimates on what the wall between California and Mexico is going to cost, but I've never heard anybody say the dimensions. Or what are we talking, like a three-strand barbed wire fence? Or
I think it would be a combination of barbed wire and brick, and in terms of cost, you're in the billions.
Yeah, well, I've heard it ranged from like three for the one show, and the other one's gone up to like $12 billion. But nobody's really said what. I mean, are we talking about the Great Wall of China?
Yeah, you're talking about the Great Wall of China, but almost. I don't think it's going to be as deep as the Great Wall of China, but it's going to be long.
Interesting.
Yep, and it's going to be billions. Look, I think one of the things we need to do to protect our borders is put the National Guard there and troops when we start bringing them home from all these bases we are at all over this planet, and bring them home and start scattering them all the way down in increments of, half a mile apiece with special shelters and shacks. And that's just the way it's got to be. And, you pick up these people, arrest them, and bring them back. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, this is Jason from New Orleans.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Brad Pitt's down there building some houses.
Yeah, I'm not too big a Brad Pitt fan. I wanted to talk to you if you heard of Zechariah Sitchin.
I know him well.
How do you feel about the teachings of ancient Sumeria, talking about the maps and everything?
I think Zechariah Sitchin's theory, his interpretation of the old Sumerian texts and tablets, he believes, of course, that we were visited from extraterrestrials from this extra planet in the solar system. It's an incredible, compelling theory. I don't know if it's real, but Sitchin is a great researcher, and it's a pretty darn compelling story.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's the first thing that actually allows evolution and the religions to coexist.
Years ago, I got his book, The 12th Planet. I couldn't put it down.
Right, right.
And then I got the next one and the next one. I mean, it's a fascinating theory. Zechariah, way up there in age, 80 plus. We can't get him on this late. Our friend Hilly Rose had him on about a year or so ago. But he may do some taped interviews with us down the line. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, Art. I'm sorry, George.
It's Art's show. Everybody still does.
Yeah. My name is Nathan. I'm from Ocean Shores, Washington, out by Aberdeen, where they have the massive power outages. We've been out since Sunday night.
Yeah.
And it looks like we're not going to be on until it's looking like here in another couple of days.
Almost the same time, I think last year in the Midwest, St. Louis specifically, they were out for days.
Oh, yeah.
4 days.
Hey, when are you going to have something about those black triangles on again?
Well, we always have. As a matter of fact, this Thursday, I've got Stanton Friedman coming on the show to talk about some of these. So, there you go.
Also, what about Dr. Michio Kaku?
He was just on last Friday with Art.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. You missed it. Okay, thanks. Next up, let us go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Memphis.
Okay.
All right, this is John. Once you said something about, you had a special topic about the monster lines.
The monster line.
Yeah, you said about creatures, monsters.
Yes.
Okay, I remember when I was like, 8 years old, and there was this lady's house that used to keep us, and she had an old garage. And in her garage, there was just a lot of stuff, and we was kind of messing around, me and my brothers and about two other neighbors. And there was a humming noise, and we was throwing rocks at bees. And there was this thing come up out of this hole, and none of us.
What do you mean, a thing came out of the hole? What did it look like?
It had like a snake body. The bottom part was like a snake. And it had, like, long arms with hair.
Long arms with hair?
Big eyes.
How big was the thing?
Well, it was, when it came up, it had been every bit about 5 feet out of the ground. And with a probably arm span of probably a grown person. Hairy arms, big eyes. And that was around about the time that there was dogs. Matter of fact, we have a local newspaper, and if anybody wanted to investigate it, the dogs was coming up like people with pets. Their dogs' bellies were being bit out.
Jeez.
Yeah, and that was in 1960. Oh,
you didn't. All right, and you didn't have any reports of people disappearing, did you?
No, just animals getting stomachs getting bit out. If the dogs were out in the yard and they stayed out in the yard, they find their dog dead the next day with a hole up on them.
And you witnessed this thing.
Well, it's in the. Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Now, when it came out of this.
Right now, this area, over in that area, there's a levee that goes around for like 10 miles. This is where UFOs were sighted.
All right.
Around the same time. It's all fenced in, and it's government.
Did they give this creature a name in the newspapers?
No, they didn't. They just said mysterious animals getting destroyed, and the dogs.
All right.
Destroyed, and there was always a hole underneath it.
That's an incredible story. All right, I did not know about it, and we will check into it. Let us go to our first-time caller line. Hello there.
Hello, George. My name is David. I live in Medford, Oregon.
Hey, David.
Long-time caller, or long-time listener, first-time caller. My remarks would be concerning Iran and the intelligence reports that have come out. We absolutely cannot let George Bush off the hook on this one. We just can't.
You think he's going to attack?
If he... It would almost seem. Well, it's like on previous programs where you yourself and other guests have mentioned that it would probably amount to something like a nuclear event that would, you know, start a chain reaction, you know, a series of events.
And they'd blame them.
Exactly. Yeah. But
God, I hope not.
We should absolutely not let George Bush off the hook on this one.
Well, it sounds like just with the story that I had at the top of the hour that he's kind of tempering the fact that this report he doesn't necessarily believe. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, there are still tense times ahead. This we're not out of the woods on this one at all. West of the Rockies. Hi.
Oh, hi. This is Taryn in Long Beach. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. And I have a little bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh. Why? What did I do?
And then I wanted to find out what you think of what I'm going to say.
All right.
Okay, you know how you've been having those different people on about how they're not paying taxes You have had those?
Yes, sure.
Intermittently?
Sure.
Well, what really gets under my skin is that it almost doesn't matter if there's a law or not. The people that are, you know, not paying, they are benefiting from the taxes that we all pay. They drive the roads. They're living in a secure country. They use the police services, on and on and on. And, I mean, I'm not a big fan of paying tax, and I'm sure we pay too much. But you know what? They need to pay their share.
Yeah, but if there isn't a law, then they have the guts to do what they're doing. I got to tell you, I file my income tax. I pay my taxes until I'm truly secure in my own head that I shouldn't, because I don't want to make a mistake. And they believe they don't have to pay, and they're not doing it because they're living off of us. They simply believe that none of us should be paying.
Well, then who's going to pay for the road that they drive on?
I have a feeling that the paper money in this country would just keep getting made up. But, you know, there are alternative ways. But in terms of the bone you have to pick, never get upset by different views, whether you agree with them or not. That's the healthy part of this country.
Well, I'm upset because that part of the discussion isn't discussed.
What, the fact that they're sponging off of us?
The fact that we all pay for all the things that they're using and taking advantage of. Just to be able to have a country where they can do what they're doing is paid by our military.
Yeah, but don't you think it's kind of gutsy on their part to stick their necks out if they're right?
I think it would be...
I don't know if they're right.
I like that it's gutsy. I do. I agree with you. But I think it would be even more interesting if they said, no, we're only paying 10% because we think that's what it should be, and we want to pay our fair share or something. I mean, maybe they can't do that, but they never bring that up.
Well, maybe
they act like, okay, so that's fine. Let's all not pay. Then what happens?
Well, maybe we should just tell them they can't use what we pay for.
No, you know that's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, thank you for listening.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Next up, east of the Rockies, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's a pleasure to finally get to speak to you. I'm a big fan, brother.
Glad you got in.
What I was wanting to tell you about tonight, if I remember correctly, didn't you say you had an out-of-body experience when you were a young boy?
Yes, sir. Only one. Never been repeated again.
Well, I was wanting to tell you my experience.
Okay, and we've got a minute and a half for you.
I've got it. A few years ago, I'm a very light sleeper anyway, but a few years ago, something was waking me up. It felt like something would bounce on my bed one time, and it was a very light bounce. I never could recreate the feeling like moving a leg or arm or dropping something on the bed. One night, I came awake, and I felt like I was sliding back into my body, and at the end of the transition, I felt the bed give that movement that I had felt before it had been waking me up. So that's pretty wild. It's never done it again. Now, I think I may have made one more trip recently, but I didn't feel the same sensation of sliding into my body or the bed moving that way when I slid home, I guess.
Wouldn't you love to harness that ability to do it anytime you want?
I would love to be able to. I would love to.
I mean, there's nothing like it. For what I remember when I was 11 years old, I mean, what a feeling of freedom. And, but, you know, consequently, I've used it for remote viewing and intuitive things, and they've worked out pretty darn well, as a matter of fact. I mean, just absolutely stunning abilities when you begin to perfect it, and it's there, and all of us have that ability to do that. Just around the corner, our special guest will be Robert Zubrin. His work is called Energy Victory. He wants us just to simply get away from oil, break free, destroy OPEC, and he's going to be a fascinating guest when he joins us in just a moment. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Just fire away. As I just answered a couple emails before the show, someone said, you never answer me. Well, I said, well, I read it, but I don't answer everyone, so I sent it back and said, I just did. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.